श्रीमद् भागवत महापुराण की जय। सो दसम स्कंद वर कंटिन्यूइंग रस पांच अध्याय चैप्टर 29 वर्स 24 जस्ट फिनिशिंग वन पॉइंट यस्टरडे कृष्ण वाज अगेन प्रीचिंग रिमाइंडिंग द गोपीज ऑफ वर्ण एंड धर्म भारतु शुशूषणम स्त्रीनम परो धर्मो यमाय Tadbandaram Chakalyana Prajanam Chanaposhanam. He said, what's Kalyan for you as Sati, as a wife, married woman? What's auspicious is to follow highest dharma, which is to serve your husbands and take care of your children and serve your relatives. And we heard that the different acharyas say that this is a maya. This is Maya. This is Maya to serve anyone of this world. That the real pro dharma is to serve Adhokshaja Sri Krishna. Savai Pumsam pro dharma Yatvir Hokshaja Bhaktir Hoitaki. We should serve Krishna, and he is actually the supreme husband. And then there's more about pro dharma. That when Krishna is talking about dharma, and the highest dharma is to serve husband, but this is highest dharma in the material world. And these are moral, religious, and social duties in our varna and our ashram, which are delineated in 20 different shastras in India called dharma shastras. And if someone follows these edicts and rules and regulations, he has peaceful, healthy, happy life, and progresses through four stages of dharma, kama, and hopefully moksha. Moksha means that you attain the direct association and oneness with an absolute truth. And the gopis are already there with Mukunda, face to face. Mukunda, the giver of liberation, has already liberated them by his love, by his mercy. And Mukunda is that person, has a beautiful face like a Kunda flower. Kunda is a beautiful flower, blossoms in the winter, whitish in color. And Krishna's teeth are sometimes compared to a row of Kunda petals, a Kunda flower. That Mukunda is right there, moksha personified. But Krishna's Kaviraj, he brings up some nice point in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in Madhya Lila, chapter 10, verse 5, and he talks about following the orders of God and breaking the orders of God. When is it? When can one do that? And he explains there, it's in relation to Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. But in the context of that, he's citing how a devotee at times, Krishna's devotee, he may not follow God's order or the rules of Dharma. Why? In what circumstance? Due to his feelings of love or prema. This is a very delicate point. Someone might abuse that point and say, well, I'm a premi bhakta, let me break the rules of dharma. But one must truly be premi bhakta to be free from the reactions of non-compliance with the dharmic rules. But he says that due to greater intimacy with God, this is a higher principle, and the very goal of all dharmas is to please God, to please Krishna. And sometimes that means to break his orders, or to break seemingly the rules of dharma. So the rules of dharma here is what we're seeing. They can be broken for the sake of more divine intimacy, more loving relationship and intimate relationship with Krishna. Krishna is ordering God, the Absolute Truth, is ordering his devotees. The gopis are devotees. Go home. This is dharma. Serve your husbands. Will they go? Will they follow that order? Will they surrender to that order? No way. They're listening, and they're going to, right in front of Krishna, they're going to break the order. Because they know that he's testing them, and through the gopis' example, he's showing that the highest order, the highest rule is to follow the order of God, which is to always think of him, become his devotee, and worship him. So in this section, in this Madhya Lila chapter 10. You can see we gave classes once on this. And in his discussion of this point, he says that the Braja Gopis, even Krishna is explaining very clearly what are their duties, what are their dharmas. And then, even then, they refuse to obey him for the sake of being with him. So this is similar the pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya ordered Lord Nityananda, you stay in Bengal and you preach because you have to do what I cannot do. I am going to pursue my internal desire, my internal reason for coming here to relish Radharani's love. But the preaching must go on from village to village, town to town. So you stay here in Bengal. You don't come to Pura, you stay here and preach. That was the order of God, the order of Lord Chaitanya to his devotee, the order of his devotee to his devotee. Now the question is, did Lord Nityananda follow that order? Did he preach? Yes, he preached for some time with Haridas Thakur. He preached from door to door and from person to person. What did he say? Vajra Gauranga, Kaha Gauranga, Loha Gauranga, Namare. Lord Chaitanya told Nityananda, you should go from door to door, person to person, and say, Bhajo Krishna, Kaha Krishna. You tell everyone that worship Krishna, become Krishna's devotee, and chant his name. So Nityananda said, yes, yes, surely. But he knew that people are offenders to the holy name. And unless they approach Krishna and Radha and Krishna through the door of mercy, the mercy door of Lord Chaitanya, and what to speak of Lord Nityananda, they'll not get the full association or success in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And one purport, Srila Prabhupada says, practically it's more important in the age of Kali to chant the Panchatattva Mantra than the Hare Krishna Mantra. That doesn't mean that we don't chant Hare Krishna. We chant Hare Krishna as much as we're ordered by our Guru and as much as we can. Kirtaniya Sadahari, that order is also there. Many orders are there. So in following that order, many gurus, they ask their disciples to chant four malas, four rounds of Panchatattva mantra. In Prabhupada's case, he said to chant a few times before chanting japa or between rounds. But his emphasis, of course, was on the Maha Mantra. Nityananda went from door to door and said, chant Gauranga's name, worship Gauranga, and spread the teachings of Gauranga, follow his teachings. So he didn't follow his order in that regard. But the real thing is that after some time, it was Rath Yatra and Chaturmasya, and all the devotees from Ambikalan, Kalna, and all the devotees from Shantipur and Navadvip, Mandal, and Mayapur were rushing off to spend Chaturmasya, the rainy season when all of Mayapur is flooded with water, and all of Navadvip is flooded with water, and you can't do anything but wait for the floodwaters to recede. Everyone would take shelter in Jagannath Puri and have the Darshan Association, Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath, and all the festivals, Chandan Yatra, Rath Yatra, and all these festivals. Nityananda thought, he ordered me to stay, but I must go. So he went. And when Lord Nityananda came to Puri, Lord Gauranga said, what are you doing? I ordered you. It is my agya, Bhagavan agya, the order of God to stay there and preach. How could you violate it? So that discussion is there. But he went because of his great love for Lord Chaitanya. So, as we have this phrase, in love, there's no rules. In rules, there's no love. So we follow rules and regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana to come to the platform of love. And we may still follow rules and regulations. Many of them are useful, and some of them are not useful. So they will be abandoned for the cause of rag and the divine pleasure and favor of the Lord. So he said that, and then Krishna's Kaviraj, he comments there in several Bengali verses, that sometimes when the devotee is absorbed in anurag, which means, it's hard to describe in English, but generally they translate it as passionate, intense divine love for God. Due to anurag, then he breaks the order, does not care for the rule of or injunctions in order to for greater intimacy with Krishna. There's interesting anecdote illustrate a similar point for Guru Bhakti from the life and teachings of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Well, it's just a little bit more. So in the verse, and actually at the end of this discussion, Krishna's Kaviraj says in Madhya Lila chapter 10, verse 7, he says, and then he cites this verse actually, he says, just, he's using the Bhagavatam to support Gaur Lila Tattva. Because he's preaching about Gaur Lila, and Nityananda's love was so great and so intense, and he wanted to intimately associate directly with the Vapu, the form and the bhavs and rasas of Lord Chaitanya and Sakshat Darshan, Sakshat Lila and Puri, rather than serve the Vani Seva, in separation. Because in separation, he would stay in Navadvipa and continue to serve the order to preach door to door. But his love was so great that in separation, love overpowers one and drives one to go and meet the beloved, even against all injunctions or rules. Forget it. I can't stop. I must meet my beloved. I must see them directly, physically, transcendentally. So that love pulled him all the way, that intense anurag he had for Lord Chaitanya. Then to support his point, he cites, and just as the Braja Gopis 5,000 years ago, they broke all the injunctions of Shastras, even when they're being ordered by God, the person that comes to this material world to restore religious rules and regulations, yada yada hidamrasya glanir bhavati bharata. Glani, glanasya, glanir dharma glani. Glani means broken. Because of demoniac rulers and kings and liars and cheaters parading around the earth in the beginning of Kali Yuga at the end of Dwapara, Krishna came to establish the injunctions of dharma, to put people back on the path of the dharma shastras and follow the codes and orders of God. That same Krishna that's preaching in Kurukshetra, when he was a young boy, and Kurukshetra, Krishna is 90 years old or 100 years old. Here he's only 11, or sometimes they say 8 in this Maharas dance. He's 8 years old and he's preaching dharma again, very strongly preaching Sri Dharma, Pati Dharma, Sati Dharma, the Varna Dharma for the coward ladies, and the Ashram Dharma for Grihastas. And then 90 years later, he preaches again. So he's consistent. Krishna's preaching on Dharma is consistent from his boyhood to his old age on Kurukshetra. That's Vasudeva Dwarkadish Krishna. But here, Krishna's coverage says, see, just as Nityananda broke the orders of God because of his love and desire for intimate personal Vapu association and greater divine intimacy. Similarly, and he cites this verse, the gopis broke the orders of Krishna about dharma because they wanted greater intimacy and closeness with God. That, they favored that over obedience to regulated rules and injunctions. Even if the orders and injunctions come from God himself. God himself is giving the orders and injunctions and rules and you're saying, forget it. I'm going to violate them. So I mentioned there was something like this, similar point, some similarity, in the life and teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. One of his disciples, his mother was very sick, and she was apparently some also devotee. And she lived in Bangladesh, and this boy was a very good disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, a brahmachari living in a temple, Gaudiya Math. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave him money, Lakshmi, and said, you go and take care of your mother. She's old and she may die soon. You should go there and take care of her. This is your duty. You're the only son and you should take care of her. I'm giving you, and this is my order to you. You leave the mat and you stay there for a week or so and you come back and try to help her in her time of need. So he compassionately and lovingly ordered his disciple, Guru Agya, to do that. So the guru, the disciple being a submissive brahmachari, he was duty-bound to his guru to carry out the order. Guru mukha padma vakya chitite uriyakya. The vakya, guru vakya from the lotus mouth of the guru is, the disciple moves and lives and breathes by that order. He doesn't move or act outside that order from the guru. That's his prana is the guru's order. His very prana. Prana is what moves our body. Prana is what maintains our life and moves our body and moves our senses. So prana for a disciple is the guru agya, the order of the guru. That maintains his balance of his mind, the order of the guru. The order of the guru maintains the health of his body. The order of the guru engages his soul in service. And the order of the guru does everything. So it's guru mukha. This is chitta. It's chitta is prana, is the very essence of his life, is the order of guru. So now, independently, that brahmachari was thinking, my guru has ordered me to go serve my ailing old mother in Bangladesh. And this is certainly dharmic. It says in Gita and Dharma Shastras that the parents, mother and father, represent Paramatma, they represent God. And the super soul, of course, is in everyone's heart, especially the mother and father. They're actually representing super soul to the children. Like super soul, the parents maintain the child. Like super soul, the parents protect the child. Like super soul, the parents teach and instruct the child. Like super soul. So they're to be worshipped like that. It says very bluntly that the children should worship their parents like God. So this is as God. Let's say representatives of God. That being said, the brahmachari decided to act independently. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to leave my Guru Maharaj. After lakhs and lakhs of births, I've attained diksha from a bona fide sadguru. And I'm in a sat parampara. And I'm engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, Krishna bhakti, which is the perfection of human life. There's no higher seva, there's no higher dharma, there's no higher activity in this entire universe than to sit at the lotus feet of Guru and serve Hari, Guru and Vaishnavas. But yet my Guru is ordering me to go. This is a dilemma for me. He decided not to go. But then he thought, if my Guru Maharaj sees me, he'll punish me. Because I'm not supposed to be here for 10 days. I'm supposed to go to Bangladesh, come and go. So then he hid in a closet. He hid somewhere in the mandir. And then he was there for a few days. And maybe not eating, I don't remember the details. And then somehow he felt a little bad about that, because he was hiding. So then he came in front of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and he said, Guru Maharaj, I didn't go. I didn't go to see my mother or take care of her. And then Guru Maharaj was very stern and he said, why? Why didn't you go? And then the disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, because I ordered you. He said, yes, Guru Maharaj, I broke your order. I know you ordered me to go to take care of my elderly mother in Bangladesh. And I went against your order and I was hiding here in the mat. But I was thinking that if I was to go and to see my mother, what can I do? Because Krishna will take care of her. But I've attained your association after lacks and lacks of births. And I couldn't, my love and my attachment to you wouldn't allow me to separate myself from you or to leave your association and go to Bangladesh. I know it's your order, so I'm prepared to undergo any punishment you want to give to me for violating your order to go there. And please forgive me, and I know I'm wrong in going against your order. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he sat back and he smiled and he looked at the brahmachari and he said, yes, yes, you have done quite right. I was just testing you. I was testing your Guru Bhakti by ordering you to go to Bangladesh to take care of your dying mother. So this is similar as Krishnas Kaviraj is discussing when he cites this verse in Madhya Leela that is Nityananda went against the order of Lord Chaitanya to run the Jagannath Puri out of his intimate affection, desire to be with him, although he was ordered to stay and preach in Navadvip. And the conclusion of that discussion, this is Madhya Leela, chapter 10, and then Krishnas Kaviraj cites this verse from the Rasa Panchadaya 29:24. He said, just as the gopis were ordered so many instructions and orders on Dharma and the injunctions of Dharma Shastras, Krishna was telling them to uphold them and go home, and the gopis didn't move an inch. They said, no, we're not going to follow your orders, we're going to break them. Then they're going to explain so many reasons why they will break those, because of their realization that staying with him and serving him is actually the pro-dharma, as this verse mentions. Now we can begin on verse 25. This is a new verse. That was just one point more on paro-dharma from another book. This is verse 25 from chapter 29. to Shilo Durbago Brido, Jadoro Gyadano Piva, Pati Stribir Nahaktavyo, Lokapes Subir Apataki. The translation, and Sri Krishna is continuing to speak to the Prajagopis. Women who desire a good destination in the next life should never abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards, even if he is obnoxious, unfortunate, old, unintelligent, sickly, or poor. So this, when it says not fallen from his religious standards, that means not morally fallen. Srila Prabhupada translates this verse, Dushilo Durbago Vridho. In this way, Krishna explained the duty of a woman to the gopis. Krishna also stressed the point of serving the husband. Quote, even if the husband is not a very good character, or even if he's not very rich or fortunate, or even if he's old or invalid on account of continued diseases, whatever her husband's condition, a woman should not divorce her husband if she actually desires to be elevated to higher planetary systems after leaving this body. That is another translation. Women who desire a better next life in the future should never abandon a husband, even if he is a bad character, Dushila. Unfortunate, old, stupid, sick or poor, as long as he is not fallen, Apataki. He's not fallen. If you see the logic of Krishna's preaching Dharma, he's a very systematic, logical preacher. As if it was just a preaching, if he was just preaching to some ordinary person about Dharma, because he's approached the subject of Dharma, Varna Dharma and Ashram Dharma from all different levels. He talked about fear, he talked about your personal ashram duty, and then he brought it even closer to your intimate relatives, and then your husband, your children, and this life, and he talked about name and fame, the risking your name and fame. He's talking all about the extended part of Dharma, which is your Varna Dharma as a coward girl, then your name in the society, and your name and reputation with the family, then your reputation. So he's talking about the subtle implications of following Dharma, the mental, how it affects the mind and your social position and your own relationships and behavior with your relatives and husbands and children. And now so that's all in this present plane. He's talking about the present plane, preaching about the present. And then now Krishna's continuing to preach Dharma, and he's saying, what about the future? Because intelligent people, Prabhupada said, they consider three phases of time. They consider where they were, even in previous lives, if they're able to. In 1971 in New York, Prabhupada said, just like in our India, we have one Shastra called Bhrigu Samhita. And in there, the person can find out about his past life, his present life, and his future life. And any intelligent man, he should know these things. Prabhupada says this in one lecture in Bhagavatam, New York, as you can hear. Any intelligent man should want to know these things about his Purva Janam and his previous life and this life. So therefore, intelligent people, they're very much considering, especially devotees like ourselves, where we were in our last, in this life, let's say. Last life is questionable, or what it was, doesn't matter so much. What we were before our life begins with Guru. Our real life begins with our Diksha. This is Dvija. Our second birth means our real birth, when we come out of darkness. So where were we before we took shelter of Guru? What were we doing? How did we think and feel? What were our aims and objectives? What was valuable to us? What do we consider important to attain in life? We think and reflect upon that and say it was upside down. It was perverted and backwards, and non-productive and mundane. And then we think about our present, what we're doing and how is our progress and how we are going forward and how we're advancing on the path of bhakti through the Narthas, different stages of Anishita Bhakti and coming to Nishta, hopefully, and on to Ruchi, etc. Then we think about the future and meditate and hanker and desire, kada, kada, kave, kave. When will that day come? Aparada, what is that? Aparada Guchi, Shudanam Ruchi, kave, habe, bolo, seji, namara. When will that day come when I'll chant the holy name without aparadas? Now I actually have Ruchi, a taste for the holy name. And we hanker for those spiritual future glorious moments. That kind of hankering is desirable. And the whole bhajans are full of this concept of yearning and hankering, which means future time. It's not there now. Bhav is not with us now. Prem is not with us now. But hankering for lalasa mai, siddhi lalasa, hankering for some devotional perfection and perfection itself, prema, bhav. So this is projection into the future. So in a similar way, Krishna is saying, what you're doing now will determine your future. Your present activities determine your future. So this is your karma. Whatever hand you're dealt, when you play, you get a hand of cards. You have to play your cards. Whatever cards are in your hand. Your cards in your hand are your prarabdha karma. The prarabdha karma that's in our pocket that we have to play out and live out and experience. So gopis say, you may have a good husband or a sick husband, whatever it is, he's your husband and you have one. Shouldn't abandon him if he's not a patiki, if he's not morally fallen or he's not degraded or irreligious or sinful. You should stick to him. Because what about the future? Aren't you worried about the future? Gopis past, present and future is right in front of them. Krishna, their beloved. If you're with your beloved, if you're with the one you love completely and absolutely, from the core of your being to every aspect of your existence, it doesn't matter what you were, what you did in the past, it doesn't matter in the future. Love is eternal time itself. So when the gopis are in the presence of Krishna, they are in eternal time. So there's no more past, present, and future. As Brahma Samhita says, in the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence. So they're with Krishna personified. But anyway, this is a way of preaching. Create some fear about the future. That's why there's rules and laws in Shastra. And there's 27 hellish planets and hellish reality, hellish experiences in the mental plane and all these different sufferings that take the place of punishment, serve as punishment to rectify and modify our present behavior to ensure that it stays dharmic. So the gopis are listening. Oh yeah, that's nice, future. Trust no future ever bright. This, you're our future, you're our past, you're our present, you're our future. That's all we know. So this isn't going to work either. So let's see what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying. That Krishna is telling about these six characteristics of the husband. As long as he's religious and following Dharma Shastras, then he should stick right by his side and serve him till the end. The Brajagopis replied, but Krishna, how can we, who have such great love for you, continue to serve our husbands, who are unappealing, unfavorable, and unsuitable? Anticipating the gopis would say this, or assuming they did, Krishna replies to this with verse 25. Okay, you're saying they're unappealing because they're ugly, or they're unsuitable because they're stupid, and you're an intellectual and like to have a good, intelligent conversation, but they don't know much. And anyway, no matter what you're saying, even if they're like this, obnoxious, he lists all the possible negative qualities of the most undesirable husband any woman could ever have. You want to hear the review? This is the unhusband. He's obnoxious. He's unfortunate. He's old. Brida. Is it Brida? I don't know what it is. Brida. Same as Hindi. He's Brido. He's old. He's unintelligent. Stupid. He's sickly and he has no money. That's a big one. You may be any of those things, but at least have some dhani, have some money. But he's adana. Okay, because that was listed last. And the word for word it says, BBT, dushila. Shila means character. Dushila means bad character. Durbhaga means bad fortune, unfortunate. Bridha, old. Jada is translated retarded. It's translated because it means stone-like. Jud means stone. So your husband's retarded. Rogi, he's sick, sickly. Adana, poor. That's the last thing. So you can tolerate five things or six things, six qualities of a bad husband. So if you're looking for a bad husband, Krishna's telling you how to find one. I'm sure no one is. So he said, okay, you said you have that idea that Abhimanyu is stupid. And Abhimanyu is a little, retarded. Radharani might be thinking and saying that he's obnoxious. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You just go home and serve Abhimanyu, your so-called husband. So Krishna says that. But then Krishna says, Vishnu, if your husbands are not of good character, but they're not sinful, then still you should serve them. For the Smriti Shastras say, patim topatitim patim topatitam bhajet. One should serve the husband who is not a patita, not fallen. Seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 11, verse 28. In other words, Sakis, a fallen husband should not be abandoned because he will be the cause of the wife's own fall down. And this word, and the last word here in line 4, pada 4, says, lokep suvir. That's loka and ipsubi. Ipsubi means if you desire a loka, a good destination, your next life, swarga loka, jana loka, tapa loka, some very high position, then this word means, Vishnu says, by those who want the happiness of achieving the same planets as their husbands in next life. So that would mean wherever the husband goes, the wife that's attached would go there. That would mean Pitri Loka, generally, it would be understood. Now the alternate explanation or the hidden explanation, inner meaning is that Krishna said, husbands should not be rejected by women who are concerned with the insignificant reputation and happiness found in this world and the next. But because you gopis have already rejected this world and the afterworld or the next world, and are instead frolicking and sporting in the vast ocean of enjoying my sweetness, from the very beginning, you have given up the service of your husbands. So he's saying that this is the internal meaning, that the happiness of Swarga Sukh or Bhumika, this term is used in one acharya, is that Swarga Sukh or Bhumika Indriya Sukh, which means to stay here on this planet and get Janmaishvarya Shruti Shribir, get a good birth, beautiful body, great knowledge and opulence, wealth, and you can enjoy your Indriya Sukh, enjoy your senses while taking a higher birth in the earth planet. Gopis don't care anything about their loka, their Ishubi. Ishubi, they have no desire for some higher loka or some higher social position. They already gave that up from the beginning of their lives, very beginning of their lives. They gave all that up and fixed their mind completely on Krishna. Marriage was just some arrangement, and even then it was considered an illusory marriage. Then the BBT has a small comment on this also. Sometimes a foolish argument, this sounds very much contemporary type of application of this verse. Sometimes a foolish argument is given that even if a husband falls down from spiritual principles, his wife should continue to follow him since the husband is her guru. Because in Shastras it says there's different gurus. So the husband is called Pati Guru. Pati Guru. Of course, guru means superior. Guru means heavy, the word itself, lagu and guru. But guru in a sense of the husband, he's supposed to represent God. Guru Nishishyat, Pitaro Nishishyat. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, says one should not become a father or husband lest he can liberate his students, his dependents, his wife, his children, etc. from the cycle of birth and death, which means to guide them on the path of Dharma. Ashram Dharma and Varna Dharma. But the husband's a drunkard and irreligious and breaking all the religious principles. He's no longer a guru. He's a guru that's fit to be rejected. They go on to say, in fact, since Krishna consciousness cannot be subordinated to any other religious principle, a guru who engages, a guru means a husband, a father, or a spiritual teacher, a mentor, a guru who engages his follower in materialistic sinful activities loses his status as guru. In fact, we've even seen, and I've seen myself in modern times, of quote-unquote gurus that engage their disciples in sinful activities, trafficking and drugs, and even other unmentionable activities, which are sinful. And in the name of collecting money or quote-unquote spreading the spiritual teachings or that person represents, he was incorrectly and wrongly and falsely engaging the disciples. So on the pretext of feeding them nectar or amrit with his instructions and his association, his engagement and service, he was actually acting as putana and poisoning the children of bhakti that were under his protection. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that putana represents the false guru, the bogus guru that poses as a giver of nectar, as a celestial being. Putana came as a celestial being with a breast laden with milk, which is called Amrit. So beautiful, she disguised herself, entered the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. Oh, this beautiful celestial being has come to bring fortune and success to her home. Maybe she's a demigoddess or the wife of some great Agni or Indra or someone. She's come to see our child and spread fortune in all directions. So guru is supposed to spread fortune in all directions and bring happiness and success wherever he goes, ultimately spiritual success, by nourishing everyone who contacts him with the milk of Krishna consciousness, like that verse from Shankaracharya in the Gita Mahatmyam. He's glorifying, there's some analogy where he says that the Vedas and the Gita Upanishad is like a cow, and Krishna's milking the cow and feeding his baby, feeding Arjuna with that nectar. Do you know this verse in Gita Mahatmyam? It's in the front. So guru is supposed to nourish the disciples. So sometimes we've heard even amongst our god brothers, they're saying to their wives, I am your guru, I'm your pati guru, you should follow me. So this purport is kind of addressing that if the guru engages his wife in mundane sinful activities, he's no longer a proper husband, pati guru. He's become a mundane, a representative of Maya, like putana. Srila Prabhupada stated that the system of monarchy collapsed in Europe because the rulers, the gurus, the superiors, the kings and monarchs, they abused and exploited their position. Similarly, in the modern world, men have abused and exploited women. And nowadays, as a result, many women reject the authority of their husbands. Ideally, men should be staunch in spiritual life and give pure, sincere guidance to the women under their care. So this is kind of a lokic consideration of some of the outward, external points and preaching of Krishna here about Sri Dharma and Sati Dharma, applying it to our modern world. The gopis, of course, being on the highest platform of spiritual perfection, were transcendental to all positive and negative religious considerations, yamas and niyamas, vidhi nisheda. In other words, they were eternal lovers of the absolute truth, Sri Krishna. So they didn't have to follow, they were already transcendent. The whole purpose of following all these rules and regulations is come to the point of manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosine. Become a priyajana, Krishna priya. So the gopis are certainly the most Krishna priyas in the universe. So this is the purport here, and this Prabhupada doesn't have any purport in this particular verse, but we can look at this word, apataki, word for word, go back to this, dushilo durbhago. It talks about these six qualities of a very undesirable husband, negative characteristics. And then he says, you should not give him up. Hatavyo, stribi. You should not give up such a husband for higher designation. If he's not fallen, there's a condition here, terms and condition of maintaining a relationship with your husbands. So by saying this, This is Krishna's cleverness, his chaturi, and his vag, his expertise in cleverness and speech, that he's saying in such a way, he's letting the gopis decide now. If he's not a pataki, so then they can think, well, is our husband fallen according to religious standards, or is he not? If he's not fallen, if he's righteous and virtuous and properly situated and following all the rules and regulations of Dharma, then he should not be abandoned and we should go home and serve him. But if he is fallen, then we needn't worry about the future and we needn't serve him. So by this, Krishna can mean a husband is not fallen. By this, in this verse, and by using this word, Krishna is indicating is that because he, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has all six opulences, Sadaishwarya Purna, because he's playing off here. Krishna is listing in this verse six things, which are not opulences. They're a curse. To be sick, that's a curse of bad karma. To be rogue, to be poor, it's bad karma. It's a curse. It's your papa fall. When you're sinful, do papa karma, you get papa fall, sinful reactions. So you're sickly, you're poor, you're obnoxious, you don't have good behavior, always angry, sarcastic and unfortunate, unintelligent, and you're not religious, you're irreligious. So now on one side there's this, the husbands, which maybe this is the fallen, this is the husband that has no good characteristics, but still you should not serve him, you should not leave him if he's dharmic. But then look at me, Krishna is saying, Apataki. I am Sadaishwarya Purna. Sadaishwarya Purna. I have complete beauty. I have unlimited, complete transcendental beauty and fame and knowledge and strength and wealth and renunciation and wealth. All six opulences. Sadaishwarya Purna. Aishwaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashriya. I have all these opulences in full. And then he says, so even though your husbands may have six faults, dosh, which are listed here by Krishna, as long as he has devotion to Krishna, Krishna bhakti, then he's considered saintly and not fallen. That's the verse, of course, in Bhagavad Gita. Apichet suracharo. Suracharo bhajate mama nanyava. He's sudaracharo. Sudaracharo. Sudur means excessively fallen, excessively achar, excessively bad behavior, excessively bad, he's obnoxious or sick, all these things. But if he's ananya bhak, if he's my ananya bhakta, if he's like dedicated to me and surrendered to me absolutely, then it doesn't matter. Overlook all these six faults and serve him because he's representative of me. He's considered saintly and worthy of a wife's seva. So then, of course, we see that what is the value of bhakti, that if you have bhakti, even if you have all these six bad things due to bad karma, a husband may have, but if he has bhakti in the fifth canto, yasyasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana, if one is actually has bhakti, then he has all the good qualities, samastate suragana. He has all the qualities of the demigods. So those are divine, spiritual, saintly qualities. So that's the real virtue of a man or a husband, that he's a devotee, has the qualities of devotion. Although materially he may be poor, but he's a devotee. He may be obnoxious and not very well-mannered or behaved, but he's a devotee. We love someone for their devotion, not their materiality. What we're honoring in people is their devotion, the manifestation of God in their heart. We honor that within another person. Of course, that's everywhere. But especially, we honor the manifestation, the recognized and accepted manifestation of God in the heart of a devotee who says, yes, God is within me and I'm surrendering to him and trying my own way to serve him. So we respect that. We even offer obeisances to someone who's initiated and following the principles. We actually get on the ground and say, accept my obeisances. God is manifested in your heart and life and you're trying to serve him. Okay, you're sickly. Okay, you're ugly. Okay, you're old. Okay, you're poor. You're obnoxious. You're unfortunate. Who cares? Once we asked someone years ago, we said, if you were on a boat crossing the ocean and then you were shipwrecked and everyone perished under the waves and you were the only survivor and you landed on an island and it was only inhabited by one bhakta, one new bhakta from the temple, He's only 2 days in the temple. And would you like to be with that one bhakta, or would you on that island, or would you like to live on that island by yourself? And the obvious answer, expected answer, would be the devotee, even if he's some very advanced devotee, said, I would like to be on that island with some new bhakta who may be obnoxious and unfortunate, whatever. But he accepts the same Ishtadev that I accept. He chants Hare Krishna. He believes in Krishna Bhakti. And I'd rather be with him on that island and somehow share Krishna consciousness together and promote his cause, and he can promote my cause, than live there alone. So that shows that what is the value of a devotee of any rank or caliber. Any rank or caliber of devotee who has bhakti for Krishna and surrendering, he is worshipable. He is honorable, respectable, and desirable association. And if we're higher, then we lift him up to our level. If he's higher, we beg him to lift us up to his level or her level. And if we're equal, then we float together in the ocean of Rasakata, drinking each other's sweet realizations and promoting each other's attachment and love for Krishna among equals. So Krishna's explained some of these points. That he says that the value of Krishna bhakti, by which one eventually develops all good qualities. However, if a person has no devotion to Krishna, he is condemnable and fallen, even if he has all good qualities. If your husband's good looking, and he's wealthy, and he's very sophisticated in his behavior, very cultured, and very fortunate, and success in business and name and fame. If he has no bhakti, it's like Gurudev used to say, Srila Prabhupada used to say, so many zeros in your bank account. You look in your bank account, 0000. That has no value. Sri Jiva Goswami, he gives a comment on this word apataki and some summary, and this is mentioned in Priti Sandarbha, and Anuchet number 332. He says, Krishna's words in this verse 25, where he says, women who desire a good destination next life. So Krishna's talking about the future. It's kind of dangling. Aren't you worried about the future? People are very much worried about the future. Insurance policies, savings, investments, isn't it? Are we very much planning for the future? Women who desire a good destination next life should never give up or abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards. Even if he's obnoxious, unfortunate, old, unintelligent, sickly, or poor. Krishna's words can be interpreted as saying the husbands of women who are fallen, because husbands are fallen if they're envious of Krishna. So if a husband is envious of Krishna, then he's considered pataki, because he's describing Krishna saying apataki. If he's not pataki, if he's pataki, pataki means he's envious of Krishna. Now, if you apply this rule to some of the gopis' husbands, you might see a touch of envy in their feelings towards Krishna. So Srila Jiva Goswami Pad says, husbands of women are considered fallen pataki because they are envious of Krishna. I mean, women means the gopis. So, therefore, the husbands of the gopis are fallen. Therefore, the coward damsels of Braj, says Jiva Goswami, have no obligation to serve them, and therefore should abandon their husbands and stay right there with Krishna. Because their husbands are pataki. Because Krishna said, if your husband is apataki, so he did, because this word, of course, Sanskrit is like that, fallen. Because if you're envious, it means you're fallen from the standard of human life. Because envy is a quality of demons, not cultured, civilized, religious human beings. Nirmatsarya. These are the qualities of the demons: greed, envy, lust, anger. All these are demoniac qualities. Rajaguna smudava. They arise from passion, anger, and lust. So envy is most, say, despicable quality, even in the material world. What to speak of entering the spiritual practices, spiritual world of sadhana bhakti? Envy doesn't work. Because the antithesis or the opposite of bhakti is envy. Envy means hatred. To suppress someone, to offend someone, to suppress them, to eliminate, to remove them, to castigate, to defile, to calumny, calumnify, envy. It shows how hard the heart is. A very hard-hearted person is extremely envious. Envy cripples, it actually freezes the heart. So love, it's very hard for love to manifest there, an envious heart. Very difficult. So Jiva Goswami is saying, because you see in the dealings of Abhimanyu, sometimes he appears to be somewhat envious of Krishna. So that's what we have. You can go on to verse 26. Krishna's going on. He's, as we say in slang language in America, Krishna is really on a roll. He's really on a roll. He's just going on and on. And I guess because on one level, no, because later if anyone wants to say, oh, Krishna's just some illicit playboy, he's a Nagar, Raja Nagar, and he just gathered all these Nagaris and had Kunja Leela. He's just immoral, irreligious, the dark lord of illicit life, that pagan god of the Hindus, that cult from North India that worships Radha and Krishna. So to debunk that and to really obliterate that type of false argument, Krishna is extensively preaching, showing that he's fully aware and cognizant of all Dharma Shastras and all the nuances of Smriti Shastras. He's a little boy. Some acharyas say at this juncture he's 8 years old, or say he's 11 at most, or 10 years and 6 months. But he's completely astute and well realized in all the Dharma Shastras, and there's 20 of them. And the essence of all Dharma Shastras, he's speaking the essence of Varna Dharma appropriately to the gopis, the abhiras. And he's preaching the essence of Ashram Dharma appropriately to Sri or to Satis, with all proper logic and reason, and he's backing it. He's quoting the Smriti Shastras. He's even saying, this is my point, this is my premise, and this is the praman to back up my statements, gopis. Do you know in Dharma Shastras it said, which he must have heard from some of the rishis, Garga Rishi or Sandilya, Bhaguri Rishi, all these rishis moving here and there. What to speak, even Narada comes here sometimes to visit Nanda Maharaja or King Vrishabhanu. Krishna knows. And he's telling them. So if someone says, oh, Krishna, it wasn't Krishna's fault. The poor guy, these gopis overpowered him. you can see it on an external level like that. So now he continues again to try to threaten the gopis, because fear is one of the ways people modify behavior. You can bring about behavior, desirable or good behavior in someone by reward. Reward and punishment. It's on B.F. Skinner's psychology research. Reward the rat with a pellet or punish him with an electric shock if he doesn't hit the right button. So it's called reward and punishment. Oh, if you do your homework nicely, you get a toffee. Or if you do good in your exam, you get a gift. So that's reward, type of bribing actually. But it's reward. And if you don't do well in your exams, then maybe it's some punishment. Reward and punishment. Then there's fear. This is also a type of fear. Then there's love. Then there's duty. There's duty, fear, love, reward, punishment. So many techniques of psychology that are implemented to bring about proper, desirable behavior in dependents or those that are under one. So, of course, the highest principle of action is love. And that's bhakti. Devotional service, moving and acting with love, because we feel. And why does someone act out of love? Because love itself drives them to act. Love creates desire to move. Love creates desire to please the beloved. First, love creates feelings of attachment. And from feelings of attachment come an intense affection, which translates as the desire to serve this my beloved. My beloved is worthy of service. And love itself creates desires and varieties of service. They manifest in the mind of the lover. Oh, I can serve my beloved like this and like that. And that's why love is the greatest source of action, because love moves the beloved in thousands of ways to fulfill the desires that arise from love. And those desires arising from love in the heart are desires to please and serve the beloved, which requires our expression of action and movement. So love-based movement or love-based behavior or action is the highest form of movement or behavior. And that's what moves the entire spiritual world. Everyone moves on the basis of love for Krishna. The love creates, oh, I can serve Krishna this way. Krishna doesn't come and say, serve me like this. I want you to do this. I want you to pick Bokula flowers, because I'm going to ask you in a few minutes for Bokula flowers, and you make a garland which I'm going to put in Radharani's bani after I brush her hair and Shringar Seva. The Manjari, the Sakis, no, oh, I want to do this. It comes spontaneously. This is love. There's no fear, there's no reward, there's no punishment, there's no this type of duty. They're not serving out of duty, they're serving out of love. So this, he's going on here to say, talk about this next verse. Aswargyam ayashasyam cha falgu kritcham payavaham. Baya, bayavaham. Jagupsitam chasarvatra yo papatyam kula striya. Opapatyam means adultery, adulterous affairs. It means upapati, above, beyond your pati. Opapatyam, translation. For a woman from a respectable family, kula striya. Now again, he's appealing to reputation. You come from reputable families. You're Vrishabhanu Nandini. You're a princess. You're the daughter of the queen of the king of Varsana. And the high birth, kula striya. You're kula. You're kula dharma. Your religious duties in relation to your family. You're kula. Kula means family. Kula striya. For a woman from a respectable family, kula striya, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. Jagupsitam. And baya avaham. Avaham means to come, to bring, to call. Avaham. Saraswati avaham. Baya avaham. They invoke or they bring fear close to one when one commits adultery. So he says that they are always condemned. They bar her, prevent her from attaining heaven, ruin her reputation, and bring her difficulty and fear. So Krishna is summarizing all of his preaching in one big hammer blow of creating fear. You'll lose your name and fame. You'll have some maybe physical difficulty and fear for your life itself. When adulterous affairs are going on, sometimes one party loses their life. Husband finds out or wife finds out, poisons husband, murders wife, this, that. These things happen. Of course, it's not happening here, but he's saying it bring her difficulty, physical difficulty. She may be thrown out of the house, her mother's house thrown out, obviously her husband's house thrown out. Now she has difficulty trying to fend for herself and survive in the forest or living on roots and berries or something, rejected by society, no safety, no security, nowhere to go, no home or hearth or protection or family support. That's difficulty. That's unfavorable. Then he said, again he's reminding her of the future. They bar her from swarga. Aswargyam, swarga prapti nehi. If you do your dharma, you can go to swarga. Aswarga, you won't go there. You have not. In other words, you'll have nothing here in the present life. You'll have nothing there. And even not only you have nothing here, you'll even have fear, and your mind will be full of fear, and your body will be full of difficulty. So what's left? Your body, your mind, and your heart, your surroundings in the present world, and your position and your existence in the future realm are all condemned. It will bring you fear and difficulty, and you'll stay here and rot in the material world, suffering reactions of your sin of adultery. Aren't you afraid of that? Srila Prabhupada's translation. Listen, besides what I just said, gopis, it's considered abominable in society if a woman is unfaithful and goes searching for another man. Such habits will deter a woman from being elevated to the heavenly planets, and the results of such adulterous habits are very degrading. So if you analyze, which I did just now, how Krishna, you just dismantled the whole existence of the gopis. Kritcham. Kritcham means difficulty, physical difficulty, kritcham, baya avaham. Baya avaham, so physical difficulty means our senses, our body, our health, our digestion. Then we say baya avaham, that will invoke or call baya, Bhaya is something that doesn't live in the body, it lives in the mind. Fear exists in the mind. Fear grips the heart. Fear cripples the emotions and grips the mind. So your minds will become affected. Your hearts will become affected. Your bodies will become affected. Kritcham, bhayam avaham. And then he says, aswargyam. And your gati, your destination of future is aswargyam. It's nashed. No progress. All your kanya life raised as a virgin, given away in proper vivaha yogya and marriage. It's all nashed. There'll be no promotion. And then, what about your kula stream? What about your kula? What about your name, your illustrious family dynasty, your gotra? That will all be ruined. So, if you take all of that away from a human being, there's nothing left. There's no body. It's destroyed. There's no mind. There's no emotions. There's no society. There's no future. What's left? Practically, Krishna's saying, if you don't leave me right now, you'll be dead. Socially, physically, morally, emotionally, mentally, futuristically dead. That's what he's saying. That's a very heavy, heavy statement. Very heavy. And gopis are unmovable. Like Himalayas. The immovable Himalayas. Their love is Himalayan. They're not moving. And then later they say, we're not going to take one step from your lotus feet. We're not even going to glance out of the corner of our eye in the direction of our houses. Not even out of the corner of our eye will we look towards where we came from. We don't lament. We don't hanker. We have nothing there anymore. That's finished. What about Varsana? What about Yavat? They won't even look out of the corner of their eye in that direction. Everything for Krishna. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur, he comments on this verse 26 in chapter 29. Sri Krishna said, you wonderful ladies have affection for me by your very natures. But any special affection that you may have for me, which is contrary and against the principles of religion, you should give that up right now. It's not anukulya, dharma anukulya. Illicit connections do not lead to swargaloka. And then, if the gopis then say, we don't care for swargaloka at all, then Krishna will say, ayasasyam, but it will also destroy your yash, ayash, your fame. It will also destroy your reputation. We don't care about a reputation. What you say and pratyukti, what I say, argument and counter-argument, argument and refutation. What about swarga? To hell with swarga. What about your reputation? To hell with a reputation. Let's see. Listen. You're speaking falsely. Falgu mitya means jagan mitya Brahman said, means you're speaking falsely because the word there is falgu. Falgu kritsham. So Vishnu says this word falgu, he creates this dialogue around these Sanskrit words. Falgu means falgu means speak. You're lying. You're speaking falsely. I know you want to go to swarga, and I know you really care about your reputation. Don't try to fool me. No! What we're saying is not false, because we consider it to be of the utmost importance, what we're saying. In other words, what we're saying is for real. It's important to us. It's meaningful to us. We're not lying. We're not saying this. Let me remind you, Krishna said, such adulterous affairs are troublesome and full of difficulties, kritcham, due to the prohibitions of your husbands and others. This is the difficulty. The difficulty is not the difficulty because in the outside or the external meaning of the verse is if you commit adultery with me, illicit affairs with me, you will suffer a lot of difficulty in your home, in your village, with your family. And then Vishnu is saying, actually the difficulty is your husbands. Your husbands are creating a lot of difficulty and obstacles, kritcham here, to our meeting. due to the prohibitions of your husbands. And then the gopis say, that trouble, that kritcham, that trouble and the prohibitions that they impose upon us, preventing us and trying to prevent us from running to meet you in Avisara, we find that those prohibitions and those obstacles and impediments created by our husbands, we find that to be the greatest happiness for girls like us who are full of rag, intense attachment for you. And then they quote Shastras also. Krishna, this is confirmed in Shastra. Vamatam durlabhatam. This cha strinam yacha nivaran tad eva pancha banasya manye paramam ayundam. Contrariness, like Vamyabhav, is the contrariness durlabhatvam. Tvam means durlabh, means difficult to it. Low means to attain, like we say greed. So when a woman is contrary and difficult to attain, what is that? Then it's this Priti Sundarbha, Anuchet 279. Gopis are quoting. So Jiva Goswami is including a statement from Bharat Muni, which is ancient discussion of rasa and love, all these things. Contrariness, difficulty of attainment, and the fear of prohibitions by women, I consider Kamadeva's greatest weapons. So the gopis are replying to Krishna saying, it's very difficult. It will be difficulty, kricham, for you if you stay with me and have a list of affairs. And besides, your husbands create so much difficulty in our meeting, so many impediments and obstacles. And then they say, don't you know, that's all about love. The more difficulty, the more risk, and the harder a woman is to get, the tastier she is. Just like a fruit, the higher it is on the tree, the tastier it is. Oh, look at that mango. Some trees, they hang down like this and you just grab. Like we have one lemon tree. I just stand on my veranda and I grab a lemon. I don't have to climb the tree. It's right there, I grab. But sometimes the mango may be way up there. Oh, it's a very nice mango. It's like the fox, you know, the fox sour grapes. Oh, how I get that? The tastiest mango is on the top of the tree. So the tastiest woman is the woman who's hardest to get. So she's the sweetest mango. So this is what Bharat Muni is apparently saying. And the gopis are saying, we're a very tasty fruit. See how juicy we are? We're full of ras, anurag, mahabhav. We're very tasty. And you see this mango is golden yellow, and our complexion is golden yellow. And the mango has a little red on the end of it. Little tip is red. See, our cheeks are a little reddish because of anurag is flooding through our hearts and tinting our cheeks with a slight reddish color like that ripe, super ripe mango. Don't you want to get that mango that's high in the tree? Then it's durlabh. It's a little difficult to reach and attain. It may be out of your reach, but we're here. You've attained us. You should consider yourself very fortunate, Krishna. That what's very hard to attain is standing right before you. Now, are you going to pass up this opportunity to relish the sweetness within this beautiful fruit of prema that we're offering at your and into your hands? So they say this is the Panchabana. This Panchabana is another name for Cupid, Kamadeva, because he has Panchabana. He wields five arrows, Rupam, Sparsham, Gandham. And this is his Manye Paramam Ayudham. The gopis are saying, or at least they're quoting this great Acharya of Ras. We consider that this is Kamadev's Paramam Yudham, like Yudhisthira, his greatest weapon. He has so many weapons, the spring season and gentle breezes, Deer Shamir, and Vasant Ritu and Deer Shamir, and the blossoming mango blossoms, and the buzzing of the bees, and all these things. But the greatest weapons, we're utilizing all those greatest weapons. We're durlabham, we're very difficult. And we show Bhamyabhav. We're very contrary. When you meet us, we're not so interested. And we overcame so many obstacles, impediments, and prohibitions to come meet you. So we are wielding, in our hands, we have Cupid's greatest weapons. And how will you stand before us? You won't last very long now. Soon, Shyam will stop his arguments and surrender to the Panchabana gopis. Because they'll start firing their prayukti, their counter-arguments, one by one. And with their arrows, like you see in the Mahabharata when you watch this television production, which is quite mediocre and amusing, the 1990s, they had something called Mahabharata. And the enemy party shoots his arrows. You know, he chants a mantra and he fixes his arrow to his bow. Hey, Tom! And he shoots the arrow. And then the other one sees, whoa, arrow's coming. Then he shoots his arrow. And for 10 minutes on the screen, in this national television, you see these two arrows, these three arrows are going, wow, 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 wow. They're trying to, I don't know what, do something, break each other. One arrow is trying to break the other arrow. This is the, in the, this ballistics, in the science of warfare, and Dhanurved, that you learn mantras, and he shoots an arrow, and you break his arrow, and all these things. So now Panchabana gopis, they have these five arrows. So their prayukti, their counter-arguments, or they're going to shoot their Panchabana, they're going to shoot their five arrows, and they're going to break all of Krishna's arrows to pieces. All his dharma bana and their varna dharma bana and their ashram dharma bana, all his arrows that he shot at them about, choom, follow your dharma, choom, follow your varna dharma, choom. And they're like, ah, okay, you know, like a great hero. If he gets struck by arrows, he just throws them out. Now in the gopis, tong. And the Krishna says, okay, let's dance. let's stop the argument. Okay, forget the samlap. Let's have you know, the sangha. So the samlap will come to a close and then the rasa dance will begin. So this is the purport here. Krishna's going on. He says, yes, but this creates fear. Bhayavaham. For the body and for one's next life, on account of this adultery, but don't you know adultery, if you engage in adulterous affairs, it creates fear for your body. Lovers sometimes perish during such times. They can lose their life. It's fearful. We're afraid of death. And what to speak, it's sinful and it's immoral and you'll be punished in next life. So it's forbidden both by worldly customs and both by shastras. This is the dialogue that Vishnath is saying. And then the gopis say, what are you talking about? How can this be? You're talking about bhaya avaham, that it will bring bhayam. Don't you know that bhaya is a ras? That this so-called fear you're talking about is a foundation. It's a foundation for experiencing ras. It's a gona ras. And we have the seven gona rasas, and it's a foundation which will enhance and increase our madhurya rati, the fear, the principle, the experience, the fear. And don't you know it says in Shastras, yatra nisheda vishesha sudurlavatvam chayan mrigakshinam tatreva nagaranam nirbaram asajjate ridiyam. Very nice. Priti Sandarva 279 Anuchet. Gopi said, listen, you're talking about fear for our body and fear for the present in terms of society and fear for a future life and our castigation to hell and our non-attainment of swarga. What is this fear? We only know that fear and the fear we're experiencing or the fear you're talking about is simply an element which enhances the loving relationship and the taste of ras between you and I. As your Madhurya Rati lovers, as your Shringar lovers and Shringar Rati. Don't you know that when love is forbidden, then the Mrigakshinam, the doe-eyed gopis, the doe-eyed beloved, is difficult to attain. Then the Nagaranam, the passionate lover's heart, Ridyam, becomes very attached to his beloved, Asajjate. So when there's fear, when it's forbidden and forbidden, their fear, the lover's afraid, oh, this is forbidden, I'm afraid I shouldn't try to woo this woman or seduce this woman or attain her love or win her love because this is forbidden. This is very fearful and dangerous. Actually, that nagar becomes even more attached to that lover's heart. And then Krishna goes on, in all times and places, adulterous affairs, opapatyam, are always condemned, chugupsitam, for respectable women, even if you readily consent and agree to bear and suffer all condemnation to fulfill your desires. How can I allow that to happen? How can I do anything that will cause you, who are the very objects of my love, to become condemned? I don't want you to be condemned or castigated or ridiculed or rejected or thrown out of the village. Therefore, I say, please return to Braj. Krishna is really adamant on the point Vishnath is telling. Alternate, hidden, internal meaning. Sakis, as you well know, everywhere in the world, illicit, adulterous affairs are condemned. Yet we find them everywhere in the world. But you gopis have heard from Garga Muni that I am equal to Narayan, Narayanagun, Samagun. Thus there is nothing contemptible or wrong in having me as your paramour, since I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I transcend ordinary, auspicious, and inauspicious activities, because the platform of prema, divine love, is beyond all considerations of karma, which is amangal, shubha, ashubha, ashubha, ashubha. This is all relativity. This is the plane of relativity where you have this black and white and duality. This is the dwanda loka, the place of duality. But there it's advait, it's the nitya dham. It's all love, it's all prema, so there's no duality. Everything is for the center. As Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev said, and Goloka Vrindavan, everywhere center, nowhere circumference. So there's not two, there's only one. There's Krishna. Eko Bahusham. So there's Krishna in the center, and there's no other center. So there's not us and them, there's only Krishna. Everywhere center, and nowhere circumference. There's only one center and center of interest. There's only one circle of interest, Krishna's pleasure, favorable activity, favorable mentality, the happiness and pleasure of Krishna. And every member of Goloka Vrindavan has the same favorable mentality to please and satisfy Krishna. And they're all thinking the same thing. Let Krishna be happy in any possible way, whatever he wants, however he wants, whenever he wants. Let me serve his cause. So there's one circle, the Krishna circle, the Rasa Mandala. The Prema Rasa Mandala, and everyone is in that mandala. No one starts another circle, or starts their own franchise, or starts a branch, or starts another spiritual world, or starts a new sangha. It's only one sangha, Krishna Prasanga. Everyone's there, united with Krishna, divine love, eternally. So therefore, there's no auspicious or inauspicious activities, because all that shubha nashubha is part of the world of karma, and it retires here in the material world. It doesn't penetrate into that world, the world of divine love. So we can... Srila Prabhupada has a small comment on this verse, which we saw in the Krishna book, very to the point, supporting Krishna's external meaning in the verse. Srila Prabhupada said, as a comment to verse 26, chapter 29, a married woman should not search for a paramour, for this is not sanctioned by the Vedic principles of life. So, Prabhupada is supporting the external presentation of Krishna in this particular verse.